out these plastic cups.
I got the same ones downstairs, and the guy opens both of the cans, and it was just like, it was like lava.
I feel like I'm like at a frat, like if someone get a ping pong ball or something, so I can start throwing these in there.
It's good. That's what you want.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Yeah, no, it's good. So what time are we at? Where are we at? What, anybody?
229.
Good enough.
There are a couple of seats in the...
Anyway, if you guys want to fill in, you don't have to stand, because, you know, this is a convention, you're going to be walking around a lot.
We got so if you got up front, if you want them.
Right
up front,
guys. Get mad if you get bored.
If you want to leave, we're not going to judge you. We do the same thing.
I would leave this panel. I don't like me.
Much more concerned about your legs making it through the next 2 days.
I'd like to lay down. There's some open floor over
there. Yeah.
Probably push these three chairs together.
If you want to take that Burt Reynolds pose, like fully on the side, arm, elbow, that whole thing. There is a photographer. It's like a dad and a family portrait.
I forgot my bear costume.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to NC Comic Con 2016. Yeah, there it is. You are at the Making Comics 101 panel. I'm Alexander Fulmer.
I'm Chris Nielsen.
We run Name Redacted Podcast out of the Triad area. Our other co-host is Colin Norris. Put your hand up.
That's
that guy. We are going to be running this panel with three friends of ours, actually, which is really convenient.
That's awesome.
We didn't have to do any research. But we're going to let them go ahead and introduce themselves, starting here to my left.
My name is Afua Richardson. I am a comic book illustrator for Marvel, DC, and Image Comics. I'm currently on the new Black Panther World of Wakanda. I'm also working on All-Star Batman with Scott Snyder. And, oh man, I'm doing so many other things.
She's busy.
I'm busy. I have no life. I also just finished the Attack on Titan anthology for Kodansha.
What? I didn't.
That
know
was
that.
One I didn't know.
I didn't know that at all.
Should have done research.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Whitley. I am a comic book writer for Action Lab Comics, IDW, and what's it called? Marvel. I like to list them in that order, so Action Lab seems much more important. I am currently writing my two ongoing series in Action Lab, Princeless and Raven the Pirate Princess, as well as the odd and occasional issue of My Little Pony, but mostly right now I'm writing The Unstoppable Wasp for Marvel, which is launching in January. I also just finished writing two one-shots that were announced for Monsters Unleashed with Marvel. I'm writing the Champions Monsters Unleashed story and the all-new X-Men Monsters Unleashed story, which will both be out in February.
Yeah, there it is. That's the reaction we like.
Yeah.
The end. That's it. That was the whole panel. Drop that mic. I'm Dave DeWanch, writer, artist, mostly writing for Action Lab, which I'm also the president of the company. I have books like Cyrus Perkins and the Haunted Taxi Cab, which I'm giving that to one of you guys. I don't know. I got to figure out how that works.
Nice.
Throw it on the ground and we'll fight over it.
Pitch it in the
go crazy.
New series coming out in February called Infinite Seven, I co-write Vamplets with Gail Middleton of My Little Pony fame. That's me.
Yeah.
So today on this panel, you're going to hear a lot about what it's like basically breaking into the industry and what it's like making a comic, whether from the writing or the art side, which is why we have these three wonderful panelists with us to give you every aspect of it that you can possibly dream of. So we're going to start a little bit by kind of explaining probably how everyone got into it and where they started and where they came from. So Afua, you want to start with this one?
Sure. It's interesting. I didn't go to art school at all. I was a musician. Yeah.
Dave is so mad.
I'm a completely self-taught artist. I was actually a flute player. And I know.
The career switch is so weird.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was a classical flautist and a singer. I was on tour as a musician, but I made my own flyers, and I really loved comics, and I really loved to draw, and I really wanted to be good at it. But I was like, I can't afford toward college. It's so expensive. And I'm from New York originally, and while I wasn't, you know, when I was off tour as like a background singer, I would have all these like dead end office jobs, or I was a bartender.
Yeah.
And
when are you like whiskey sour?
I make a nice mojito, but
I know who I'm hanging out with tonight. Nailed it.
I had all these jobs that had computers that had Photoshop on it. So I'm like, you know, I'm gonna learn this. Instead of lunch breaks, I'm gonna stay here every day. And I'm going to learn how to do this.
Nice.
And the web was a terrible place to try to learn to find anything.
I found you found too much.
Yeah.
But
I'm just gonna look up Photoshop.
I kept going to conventions and just talking to different artists, writers, editors. You don't think to speak to editors or company owners to figure out how to get into comics, but they're the people who are hiring.
Yeah.
And you speak to writers because they're the ones who are looking for artists. You speak to other artists, they can tell you how to be an artist. But what writers are looking for, you know, that's something that was very unique. So, some of the people who helped me, Sanford Green, Neil Adams, who is...
Just name drop like it's nothing. Like, yeah, Schwarzenegger was my workout coach. Whatever.
He's one of those people who, you know, he's more bark than bite, but he... He'll tell it to you straight. Brian Stelfreeze is also a really amazing teacher. He's like the Yoda of comics.
He really is.
Yeah.
He just like dissect your work and be like, this is what you need. And I'm like, you're so right.
Brutally honest, like very much one of those people who, like, if you ever interact with Stelfreeze, especially on a professional level where you're showing him something, he will look at it and be like, oh no, that's terrible. Don't do that. Don't, like, stop doing that. But this is okay. So this, no, turn this into that. And he's very, which is very good. It's what you need because you don't need somebody to fill you full of false hope. So,
exactly. Helpful. Yeah, very, very helpful. But he won't be cruel about it.
Just honest.
Exactly. Very, very honest. And he's like a technician. He looks at the engine of your artwork and will break it apart and tell you, okay, you need to work on this, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Yeah.
So I took all of that to heart, and I carried a sketchbook around with me every single day. Every single day. And all the different jobs that I had, you know, from telemarketing to, you know, singing background on Soul Train. I like, you know, it's...
Wait, what?
How old are you?
It's just so weird.
So this is turning into a how do you get into music podcast or panel?
No, but
wow.
I would go to conventions, and instead of taking a giant portfolio, I would have postcards with my best artwork on it and contact information. Because I know that a lot of folks are there to sell books. They're seeing millions of people. I don't want to plop a giant book on their desk and be like, tell me what's wrong with this.
Right, yeah.
You know, so I walked up to Mark Silvestri at San Diego Comic Con in 2006, maybe, and I handed him a postcard. And I was like, thank you for meeting.
the Meek Mouse voice. Oh, I really like you. Kind of work with you.
And I'm like, hey, can I buy something? Because it's such a rare industry. You can just go up to the creators of your favorite books, and they're right there. Like, when does that happen?
Willing and waiting to talk to you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. That never happens. Like, when are you gonna go up to like Tom York at a convention and just be like, I love everything you are. Can you just sign this, please, and tell me how to be like you? That's never going to happen, you know, but it'll happen in comics. Right?
You know, you know what I like about the story, though, is like you identified that you were a work in progress the entire step, all steps, all the way through. You didn't come in thinking, I'm going to own it. You're going to take it all in and absorb and learn and refine. And I've seen you grow insane amounts in the few years I've known you, you know.
Thank you.
And you were like awesome before I knew you. So it's crazy to see, you know. I mean, I think that's the thing about making comics. You have to kind of have an ego to do it because you have to put yourself out there.
Yes.
But you can't have that ego that forces you into a box where you're not going to learn.
Right.
You were like, I'm going to learn, I'm going to suck it all in, I'm going to do it, you know. So, I mean, it's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Even now, it's like, I'm doing these jobs. It's like, okay, how do I redefine myself? How do I get better? How do I, you know, be more interactive? How do I become a faster artist? How do I, you know, how do I keep growing when I'm at the point where people are too afraid to tell me what's wrong? You know, so I'll move along so we can get to how they got into comics.
That was like seriously like an advanced thing too. It's like you're honing your craft as an artist and you're trying to develop style and storytelling and speed, right?
Yes.
And comics is all about speed. Like if you can't like do monthly, a lot of times people just kind of forget about you. Like it's like not doing San Diego Con every year.
Yeah.
Like if you're not there, like no one knows that you're still like around.
Even for
right?
big titles like Afterlife with Archie, like they slagged off a lot because they don't have that monthly.
So monthly comics, it's like seriously, if you want to be in comics, deadlines are really tough, and you got to figure out how to reconcile all of that.
Yeah. Right. Jeremy, how did you get started in working in this industry?
So I got started, I don't have any sort of comics related degree. I have a degree in English and creative writing from the University of North Carolina.
Woo! Give it up!
I had always loved comics. I had grown up on comics. My dad was a huge comics nerd, and when I lived in California growing up, there was a great comic shop down the street from me, and then when we were...
Where were you in California?
Livermore. Livermore, California.
Oh, that's like right over the hill from me.
Yeah.
Where I'm at.
Yeah, we went to Fact, Fiction, and Fantasy.
Come on, hang out.
Anyway, so we moved to Lenoir, North Carolina, where there was not a comic book shop. There was one in Hickory in the mall until that closed. Thanks, Jim Lee. I remember buying a lot of copies of X-Men from that store. It's not there anymore. And so I didn't read comics for a long time. And then I came to college at UNC, and there was an Ultimate Comics right down the street from where I worked at Blockbuster.
That's a very old-timey sentence, by the way.
thanks for shutting that down, Jim Lee.
Blockbuster is a movie rental store where you used to go and rent physical discs or...
There were these things that were like square. They were called cassettes.
Yeah. You used to go and they would let you take it home, but then you had to bring it back.
It's like a red box the size of this
three
room.
3 or 5 days later, depending on how old it was.
It's like a red box TARDIS. Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's like, what? No way.
Pure gold on that one. Thank you.
What?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I started going to that store, met a retailer named John, who many of you will know John, who worked at Ultimate for a long time. He's not at Ultimate anymore, but he's probably here somewhere. Started picking up comics again. The first comic I bought when I got back into comics was for my wife. It was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Nice.
Season. Number one.
Season.
I happened to stumble upon another book being written by the same guy that wrote Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which had the X-Men in it. And I was like, hey, I will read a Joss Whedon written X-Men book. And it turned out that book was pretty good. So I started reading more comics, and I was like, you know, I'm theoretically a writer. I should try writing comics. I started out writing a series with my friend Jason Strutz illustrating it, called The Order of Dagonet, which is all about basically the fairy and magical creatures of England's past coming back and wreaking havoc on modern England, and the only thing that can stop them are the Knights of England, who are, of course, like modern knights, so they're all like Ozzy Osbourne and Ian McKellen and stuff like that, which I thought was a great idea. I wrote, Jason illustrated, we got a whole bunch of copies printed and sunk a lot of money to it, started selling it at Ultimate. Well, selling it is probably the wrong word. Carrying it around. To convention.
Peddling. I think peddling is the...
Yeah.
Peddle your wares.
And eventually I started...
I like the British accent along with the Dagonet thing. It's a good tie-in.
Eventually I started writing this other series, Princeless, which I wrote the first issue of.
If you have not picked it up, please pick it up.
It's good.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, I wrote the first issue of, and a friend of mine illustrated the first issue, and it was not the prettiest comic. It was not.
This one's never pretty.
It's not fantastic. but I happened to take it to a convention called Heroes Con, where I got sat next to this dude who was having a miserable time.
Sorry to interrupt, but like for years, they would put me in Artist Alley, and I would call it Sex Offender Alley, because it would be like me facing the women's bathroom all the way in the back. And I was just like, Jesus fucking Christ, why every year, God?
This story is actually also on our podcast.
So we're sitting there next to each other, and that's where I found your work. And
neither of us were selling anything.
No, that's awful.
So we got to talk to each other, and then we got to hear
two
each other's
guys who
pitches
can't sell, then sell
over and over and over.
He's really good at pitching this book, by the way. And I was like, hi, I like this pitch. I think I want to buy this book.
At the end, we trade off books, and I get a call from Dave probably about a month later, and he's like, I really like this book. Some buddies and I are putting together this new publishing company, and I don't really like the art, but the artist just decided he didn't want to do comics anymore. So if you can find me another artist, I would be happy to work on this with you guys. And he hooked me up with Mia Goodwin, who did the first volume of Princeless, and then eventually ended up hooking me up with Emily, who's my my continuing co-creator on Princeless.
It launched a thousand
ships. The rest is interesting, yep. Yeah.
So, I like reverse engineered my way into comic books. I had this thing with my dad, and he worked for PG&E, and we were in California, and they shipped him to New York for like 2 years, and I never saw my dad, and he would just send comics to me. And the only way I could bond with my dad, I'm not gonna cry, but the only way I could do it was by like taking the books. I mean, the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first Frank Miller Wolverine, all the like the best stuff ever. And he would send them to me, and he would just go into the comic shop and say, hey, what's cool? And he didn't know comics from anything, but he would send these books back to me. And that's how we communicated. He's like a total sports nerd, and I'm like a jock, and I'm like a total comic nerd. But it was like the one thing that we could like touch base on every 2 weeks. Hey, did you get the package? Yeah, got it, blah, 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 blah. Bagged and boarded them, cherished them. Like, still have a lot of those, today. Then I started drawing, went to art school, got the degree, did all that. And then I just kind of realized that the only reason I'm really drawing is to tell stories. I'm a natural storyteller. I have a point of view that I want to get out and across to people. And I want to entertain. So I transitioned into writing. Still draw every once in a while, but then commiserating, I think it was in 2010, this awful show, Rewind, Sex Offender Alley. I have so many awesome stories come by my booth. Like, I have got like one of the best stories
podcast for those
so
stories.
Yeah. I think I sent you the drawing that I did that.
It's still in my email inbox, and so I'm just like, I can't delete it.
Like, that's the drop of my
seriously, find Dave and ask him about stories.
I was next to you.
And you were like watching it all unfold, and you're like, I can't believe this is happening right before my eyes. I mean, it's amazing. Like all good things, alcohol was involved. I was sitting at this awful convention for me. I mean, I'm sure it was a great convention, but with five very like-minded, very frustrated independent creators, and we all just kind of went around the circle and said, what do you get at? What do you want to do? Why do you want to do it? And so we started identifying our strong suits. And I was clearly really, really great at interacting and bringing things out of creators and working with creators. So I just de facto, in this hypothetical company of ours where we're drinking, I became this creative director. And then, like, on Monday, I woke up, like, hungover, and they were like, hey, yeah, that company, we're we're doing this. And I was like, I guess I should make some calls then. And
I was drunk. I don't remember any of this.
Literally.
Google a couple things real quick.
Yeah, head scratcher. We had a book that two of the creators and the business people were working on that we decided to kickstart. And meager $5,000 Kickstarter, and this is before Kickstarters were big and, you know, $100,000 Kickstarters. We made like $4,500 on this Kickstarter. And rather than like just pay for one issue, we bought a laser printer and we started printing our own books, like DIY, like punk rock.
Ugliest books you've ever seen.
He knows, because one of Prince's first run.
Apparently it doesn't do pink.
I love
you know
it so much.
That scene in Office Space where they beat the crap out of that machine and they're in slow mo and it's really super cool. Totally did that. but we did it after we wasted a ton of money.
I hate ink.
And we realized that we were selling enough books to not have to print our own books, because every time you mess up your own project, it costs you money. Like, if someone else messes up your project, they have to reimburse you and they have to like reprint that thing, right? So year one, we did like one book a month, and then three books a month, and now we're up to 20, and 20 monthly books. A lot of them are miniseries, but all creator-owned for the most part, and I think there's maybe 20% licensed. We work on the Miraculous project with Nickelodeon and Zag Entertainment, up-and-coming animated project. We've worked with the NFL. We've done some crazy jump-the-shark stuff. I mean, like, stuff that when you're getting flown out to go to the Super Bowl in New Orleans and you're hanging out with the Players Association and you're drinking just vodka and eating beef in the second year of your company, you're like, "This, more of this, please."
You know? It's just another Tuesday.
But then you wake up like the next weekend and you're like, "Shit, I bought a $5,000 suit for that. Like, what did I get from that?" And then, you know, at the end of the day, you get good books. Like, we put out some pretty cool books, man.
Not a lot of NFL books, but
they're really super hard to work with. I mean, that's another like hurdle that I would never ever suggest. Yeah. It's literally like working with one dude that's super in love with Luke Skywalker, and you got to get that cleft perfect every single time. It's awful. It's crazy.
No, it's more to the left.
Yeah.
Lefter. Yeah. More lefter.
So one of the biggest through lines here, obviously everybody in this room knows, you make a comic book, you need an artist, you need a writer, bare minimum. But it seemed like the thing that all three of you touched on was the self-starting nature of what the comic book industry is right now. And I don't know if you guys wanted to maybe talk more about that, or about the idea of like what you're seeing people do trying to kind of start out making comic books and learning the craft.
I think it's been revealed to me. I did not realize this when I started, but that's all fairly new. Self-publishing and working your way up through your own small thing is kind of new.
Webcomics helped that out a lot.
Yeah, I remember I was on a panel with like three guys in London, all of whom were like big deal guys who'd been writing for Marvel or DC for 20 years at this point. And they were like, "How did you guys get into comics?" And like, one of the guys is like, "Oh, I was working in the, you know, printing part, and they were like, hey, you like comics? We need to get this Fantastic Four thing done by next week. You think you could write that?" And I was like,
dude, if somebody came to me with that, I would be like, yes, my job sucks. I'm quitting today. Let me just go ahead and write iconic Fantastic Four forever.
And then, like, they go to the next guy, and the next guy is like,
"Let's just change the name and make it Iconic Four. You're there."
Yeah. Next guy's like, "Oh, I had an internship down the hall, and a friend of mine was working with Marvel, and he was like, hey, man, don't you like such and such character? Don't you want to write about that guy?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, okay." And they get to me, and I'm like, "Am I the only person who got into comics intentionally? Like, you guys are just hanging out, doing another job, and somebody was like, hey, you want to work in comics?" And you were like, "Eh."
Like, these guys tripped over a rake into comics?
Yeah.
I like that. I like that it's... people that have everything. I like that it's that people have everything covered in making the comic, except for the people that are actually like making writing it.
The creation of the comic is not covered. Everybody who's printing it and selling it to stores is fine, but the guys who are actually creating the content are like, "Where are we gonna? Oh, dude, we got a story due in 3 days. Yeah. Oh no."
But I mean, that's I think that's a kind of a big thing with getting into comics. If you want to get into comics, if you want to just do your own thing and sell however many copies of something it sells, which is in some ways harder to do in a manageable way. I mean, you look at like the only person I know that does that successfully is Terry Moore. He just makes comics and then people come and buy them whenever they're available, and he just has his own press. But everybody else I know, it's like you gotta get stuff out. Like, deadlines are the driving force of comics, especially if you're working for a big publisher. Like, the reality is there's an issue of Spider-Man coming out this month, whether you write it or they hire somebody else to write it, and if you can't keep up, they will find somebody else to do it. So a lot of it is about turning stuff around and paying attention and doing things right the first time rather than having to have somebody coach you over and over and over on something. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's like literally, they just announced this so I can kind of talk about it, but like, I was already doing the Champions Monsters Unleashed, and I don't know what happened, but like 2 weeks ago, they were like, hey, do you want to do another Monsters Unleashed story for All New X-Men? And I was like, oh, sure, when is that coming out? February. Oh, so the same time the Champions one I wrote a month ago is coming out? Yeah. Do you think you could have an outline to us by, like, oh, I don't know, Monday? Because this is Thursday. What I did was go, okay. And then 2 hours later, I sent them an outline. And they were like...
That's fast, by the way. That's very fast.
And they were like, oh, this is terrible and doesn't make any sense.
But I like the
base of this story. So why don't you read these 10 comic books about these characters so that you know what you're talking about? And because like I turned around and I was like, all right, it's an X-Men story. Like, X-23 Wolverine is, you know, the main character, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna read a bunch of that. And then I read like the two most recent issues of All New X-Men, and then I was like, okay, I got a handle on this. And then they were like, all right, so we noticed that this character's not in this story, and I was like, who is that? Oh, he wasn't in the two issues I read either. Okay. Hold on, let me do a little more research.
So they've got pillboxes that they're checking off that they need X, Y, Z, and X-23 to be in this to make that the thing.
Yeah. I mean, more or less, you know, they kind of, I mean, to some extent, everything I've done for Marvel, they've come to me with a, like, this is the idea we had. Figure it out.
Here's the thing, though. That, to me, for the longest time, was, like, the dream job. I was like, yeah, man, give me Teen Titans. I would rock the hell out of that book, right? And I'm like, you know what? It's cool. But to me, being an indie publisher, there's marks of success that go maybe shorter in some people's minds, but in my mind, much, much further. It's doing it. You don't need to do it for an audience. You need to do it for yourself.
Yep.
Second, you need to do it for an audience and win that audience. Right? I mean, because really, you're the bear and you're in the woods, and what happens in the woods, who knows, right? And then you need to move someone to either love it or hate it. It doesn't matter one way or the other. Right, but you move them to actually give a crap about telling you that they loved it or they hated it. Right?
Good and effective are two different things.
Yeah.
And then it's success.
That's
and
the point of storytelling.
Yeah. And then it's working for Marvel.
Yeah. So, emotional reaction.
And this guy's seen all of that. You've done all of that.
The first issue of Prince was sold, what, 700 copies?
Yeah, on a laser printer.
Yeah. Sold 700 copies. Basement. Nobody talked about it until I started just sending them copies of it, and I was like, here, would you read this, please?
And here's the thing. The original Prince list, which I still have. It's bagged and boarded with my dad's comic books. I read it, and I was like, man, this is terribly awesome. Like, it was not ready for mainstream. It was not ready for primetime, right? But the heart was there, the direction, everything that Prince list is was in that book. And it wouldn't have happened. No, it was all there. It's just, it hit the first two levels. It didn't hit the last two. So what you allowed me to do was just make it resonate with people. So like, I read that book and I was like, man, this book has heart. I like, read it, you know? And so now when I work on other people's books. I publish other people's books. If I write a book, it's something that I want to do, and I could give a crap about Teen Titans right now, because you know what? I was like, Damian's awesome. I want to really write Damian. But guess what? There's like a bunch of people that feel the same way that I do, and I'm not going to contribute to Damian. There's, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to kill him, and they're going to bring him back, and then they're going to kill him again.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? Like,
it's just a circle.
Whatever the agenda is what happens. Yeah. You know? So, like, to me, mainstream comics are very circular. It just happens every 20 years. And like, that's the thing about readership, because I worked in retail, too. It's a 20-year cycle. Everything that you're reading right now 20 years from now is going to happen again.
Yeah.
In mainstream comics. Yeah. Sorry, dudes. Spoilers, 20 years from now, whatever's happening right now,
like, you can even look at superhero movies, because like there's the late 70s and then the late 90s.
Well, I mean,
know, just those cycles.
I mean, not just that, but like the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head that's really been done that hasn't been duplicated in the same way was when they decided to kill off Jason Todd by fan vote. Like, that is something that you don't really see very often, and that's rare.
That actually just feels like reality. Point.
Yeah, so, yeah. But I mean, because everybody was like, everybody kind of hated Jason.
I think Twitter is just that fan vote now.
Yeah, kind of like if someone screams about it loud enough, then you know, Donald Glover becomes Lando Calrissian, which is a good choice, by the way.
Yeah.
But we want to open it up to questions for everybody, because this is supposed to be for you guys to be able to kind of get a little bit more knowledge about what it's like developing and creating comics and whatnot. So we have three very, very well-versed panelists here. So let's open it up. Throw your hands up. Let us know what you have to say. I'll repeat the question. Yes, you, sir.
So say you have an idea for a comic, and you have just like the general idea of where you want to start and just like big things along the way. When you guys are mapping out your story, do you have every single thing that's going to happen to these characters written down, or do you just have big moments and then you just let the rest happen and come in?
What's your writing process, essentially?
I want to know yours, because that's crazy.
We've been reading Princeless to my girlfriend's daughter, and like, I've just been like, where is this coming from? So I do want to know that.
So I sort of, when I write my stuff, and this is what made, this was my hardest thing transitioning to mainstream comics, is basically what I tend to do is I tend to have a couple of like, points on the road that I know I'm going through. Like, I know we've got to hit this. This is a major character moment. This is a major story element. We have to get to this stuff. And then I start, like, I just kind of throw my characters in there. And, like, most of my development that I do is on the characters and not on the story, because I know that the characters, if they're well-formed enough, will make the story happen. Like, they'll figure out for me how I get here.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, it's not the way I think it is.
I was about to say, are you ever surprised? Because sometimes I'm like, what the hell just happened? Yeah.
It's like playing D&D.
Yeah, it's
with yourself.
Well, that's
yeah.
Like, I write as well, and I had a friend of mine actually ask me about that the other day. I had a conversation about it, and he was like, how do you know that that's going to happen? I was like, because I know this character's schedule. I know what Netflix shows he likes. I know what college he went to. I know what school he went to growing up. Like, and it's important, and it doesn't seem important, but it's very important, because the character has to be real to you to be real to everyone else.
I think coming at it from a literary angle, there's only so many stories to be told, and pretty much all of them have been told in one form or fashion, and what's going to make yours different is the character, is knowing the ins and outs of this and when this character is going to react in a completely different way. Because if you do the plot first and then you leave the character for later, you're just going to end up with a boring story.
I get pitches all the time. I get like 7 submissions a day, and it's bananas how much of it I just look at and think, I've seen it, and there's nothing in your pitch that's telling me it's going to be something contrary to what I've already seen. Mm-hmm. And it could be the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, and I'll pass on it. And I'll take something like Princeless and look at it and go, holy crap, you got something there. You got something good, and we can fix this and make it like the best thing on the market. And Jeremy's done that, man.
Yeah, you have to make people ask questions also. They have to care about where these characters are going. How do you create a relationship that people want to see the outcome of? Like, what's going to happen? How are they going to, like, you get the basic overview. It's like, I need to know. It's like a Netflix series that you kind of binge watch. It's like, you create that sort of longing within your
audience.
Yeah. It is. Like, I need to know.
And that's really important in comics to keep readers coming back because it's such a fickle audience.
And you're talking about, like, you know, comic book characters and comic book storylines that have gone on for, you know, 70 plus years. Yeah. So you have to recreate the characters and keep the characters interesting for, you know, 7 decades.
I think it's also like you've got to live for your characters and you've got to feel like what they feel too. Like, I'm writing Infinite 75 right now, and I knew where I was going with the plot. I had this whole thing mapped out, like you said, and there was a loss of innocence that, like, in my mind, it wasn't there in the story. And when I got to the end of it, my heart was broken. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I just put that down. And then I hit send to my artist. I said, just go, dude, just do it. And he's gonna knock it out. And I know it, you know? But I didn't think I was gonna go there. The characters told me that this is happening to them. Yeah. And I had to do it.
It has to be real
and
for
I
you.
Hated
it,
doing it.
And do you feel like some of that is part of that expression of yourself where, like, you start writing things? Anytime you start writing something blindly, you start realizing things about yourself you didn't know before?
Well, like, for me, I don't even write a script until I've lived in that character. You know, like, where they are, what they do, what music they listen to, like you said.
Yeah.
And
you have to, it has to be a real person.
And I know my beats, you know.
Yeah.
Like Cyrus, like, so. Long story short on this thing, I got sick a couple years ago, and I was literally dying. I got into a taxi cab, and I said, if I die in this cab, I swear to God, I'm going to haunt it. So get me to the goddamn hospital right now. And he was like, which hospital, what? And the first, like, issue is us trying to get to the hospital. Obviously, I got to the hospital. But it's almost like beat for beat.
He's actually a ghost.
That, except... The kid dies, and then he winds up haunting the taxi cab into the driver into solving his murder. Like, I woke up from the hospital after surgery. My gallbladder failed, and it was about to rupture, and I was in the cab, and it was bad. Because I thought it was food poisoning. I was, like, 6 days in, like, I'll get better. I'm a man. I don't need directions.
I'm so tough.
Yeah. So, ripped this thing, and... By the time I was finished, the characters had informed me on where the story was going to go. I didn't know. And I collaborated with my artist, too. I mean, that's a huge thing that, like, we haven't talked about because we're, like, writer-centric here.
Yeah.
But I was like, hey, do we go full boat supernatural or do we like, base it in reality? Because it's all super reality. She's like, there's a goddamn ghost in this story. She said, go supernatural. Go, do it. And I was like, okay, cool. So we went for it. I had two options. And I'm super glad we went the way we went. And I wouldn't have gone that way if it wasn't for the person I was working with.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's this is the only time that, like, if you're not working for Marvel and DC, like, they're going to mandate, like, sort of what you do. But if you're doing, like, creator-owned stuff and you're working with an artist, to have feedback instantaneously and then to see them emulate your thoughts and feelings and then make it better, I mean, it's kind of, being, like, married to the most awesome person ever and just waking up and being like, I can't believe you put that in my inbox last night.
Yeah.
You know? It's crazy.
They're not seeing things the way you see them.
No.
They're interpreting your words, and they're going to take it in a different direction. Like, oh, well, I'm seeing something else. It's like a giant elephant in a room. You see a trunk and ears.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a foot back here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a scene in Cyrus Perkins. If I read it, I get misty, and it's because Anna drew it the way she did.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, it's crazy. And it rips my heart out. And, like, I think that's the thing. Like, if you can write something or draw something that, like, makes you feel the way you want your reader to feel, you won. Someone's going to feel that way.
And also, as a creative, you have to fill a need. You have to, you know, sort of, just as you're creating something for your audience to have a longing for the outcome of these characters, you also, for, like, what you're creating, of course, Jeremy mentioned it, all these stories have been told a million times over, different archetypes and so on, but what is it that you're going to create that someone can't get someplace else?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only within the outcome of the story, but within the story itself. What are you making that is unique. And
here's a question to the audience. Like, raise a hand. Like, who wants to make comic books? It's a pretty fair amount. Who wants to make their own comic books, or is the dream to work on, like, other stuff?
That's two questions.
Dang. Who wants to make? Colin says both.
Creator owned or Spider-Man?
Both. So, okay, hold on. Creator owned first. Creator owned.
Creator owned. That's me. All
right, hands down.
Okay.
Who wants to write for the big two or all of them?
Spider-Man. That's also me.
Yeah.
Who wants to do both? Like,
who wants to do both?
That's okay.
Right.
So there's.
We love you all equally.
It seems like there's a lot of people that want to do their own stuff, which is awesome.
There's just different levels of expectation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because like I love Teen Titans. I would write the hell out of a Daredevil. I'd love it, but I'm not Frank Miller, man. When he wrote it, they just said, "Here's the keys, man, go." And he wrote the shit out of that book,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so good, and it's good because they gave him the keys,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But now I just don't know.
There's a lot of restrictions when you're talking about big two Dark Horse things like, you know, Hellboy or some of the bigger titles on like things like Archie. They have a lot of restrictions because every character is essentially developed now by creators before you that have been just incredibly influential over the characters.
And, or the 5-year plan of something.
Like, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
They know where
there's a brand behind it. They know what movies are coming out next.
In a way, you know, as an artist, I'll say I feel like I don't have that many restrictions.
Yeah.
You know what? I
was actually going to ask about that. As an artist, this has to be a little different for you.
You would think that these giant companies, it's like, well, you can't do this, you have to do that, it has to be like this. No, they're sort of giving you a script with a character that you already know. It's like someone who you already know. And it's just like, okay, this is the situation that we're putting them in. So we're going to leave it to you. This is what happens. Do it the way you want. And I'm like, oh.
That's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, for writing, it's almost two different jobs,
yes.
Creator-owned stuff and corporate stuff, because you know, creator-owned stuff is great. I like having the freedom to do whatever I want to do and steer it however I want and just make stuff up. Like, I just make stuff up all the time in Princeless, and nobody says anything to me about it. But sometimes that takes a lot of, like, jogging and taking showers and soul searching,
going on a vision quest.
By the way, this all sounds great to me.
I love showers.
Trying to figure out exactly what this character is, in addition to what the town is, in addition to where they're going, in addition to what the story is. Whereas, like, when
they're just like Cheetos and like Netflix. So.
Well, yeah. Whereas, like, I'm writing Wasp now, and they were both Mark Waid, who created the character, and Tom Brevoort, who's my editor on that, were both very like, all right, go for it. So it's like, all right, it's in the Marvel Universe. She's Hank Pym's daughter. Like, I know who she is. I know where she's been. I know it's in, like, she lives in New Jersey. All the action happens in New York because that's where the Marvel Universe is. There's only a certain amount of New York and New Jersey. And so
it's
like
a finite space.
Yeah, it's
like
a finite
Greenland.
Space. And well, and
it's kind of like there are borders.
I know everything's legal in New Jersey, but there's a certain.
Is that true? I'm in. What's going on?
I lived in Jersey City.
Watch that.
I lived in Journal Square.
This got weird.
It's like runoff.
Yeah,
it's got really weird.
It's like. It's like, all right, half the story's already written for me. All I have to do is just figure out these 20 pages. Like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Top Chef, where you have like a limited palette. Like, I have to make stuff out of
yeah.
I have to MacGyver this together.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
So we actually, we have a couple more questions. I want to get to a few more questions. We're going to start here.
That's a good question.
Oh, man. There are a lot of things that have to be considered. You know, the kind of personality that the character has, you know, what's practical to them, especially when it comes to women, where it's like the urge to put a woman in something considered sexy is...
like a jaguar? Like a Ferrari?
No, and in practical... and in Practical Suit, like, you have to think about the kind of person that they are, the kind of body type that they have, what they're doing. It's like, are they...
If that's something they would be willing to wear.
Yeah. Exactly, the kind of personality. If they're super shy, they might hide in their clothing. And then also, you want to make something that people will cosplay.
Yeah.
That's easy to draw over and over again. You don't want to...
I super love the Marvel film universe, because even though it's, like, superhero-y, it feels practical.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
like, that's the one thing I don't like about the DC universe. I just feel like they just keep, like, throwing crap on top of crap. And I'm like, guys, like, trim that down a little bit, and you got something good. And I almost think that that's the difference between the Marvel and DC film universes. I can actually kind of believe one, and the other one, I just don't.
Yeah. I go into a whole, like, I make a Pinterest board for my character. Like, I'll go shopping for them. Like, oh, they would totally wear this.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know what? Actually, these are their colors. These are their color palettes.
Well, I mean, you got to think about characters like Valiant has a for lack of a better term, husky female character named Faith. And Faith is awesome. If you guys don't know about Faith, Faith is dope. And, like, the character model is great, and the costume is great. And it makes it, we're actually right here, hold that up. That's Faith. Faith is dope. So if you guys don't know about Faith, get into it. But, like, that's the kind of stuff you have to consider.
Praise Jesus.
Yeah. Praise Faith, Jesus.
Get into it.
Yeah, but, like, get into Faith. I just, we're going to cut that off. Damn it. Damn. We're going to move on to our next question now that Dave has railroaded me.
Bro. Yeah, you have to think of very practical things that they can move around in, that they would wear, that other people would want to wear, but also fitting their body type and what it is that they do.
Well, and like a sci-fi around. In a sci-fi world, like Aliens is like my jam, like the second one, right? I mean, you got these colonial marines, right? They exist for one purpose, and it's to like chew bubblegum and kick ass. They're all about that's Predator, but whatever. But like that exists, and it's believable because of the way they design that.
Yeah.
Everything about that's practical, and I love it.
And if they had sexied up like
Vasquez or Sigourney Weaver,
it would seem so weird and out of place in that story. And
sexy space suit.
Yeah, like
Barbarella. You'd be like, wait, what?
It's fine if it's part of her personality. Like, there are women who are totally like, wear a sexy suit.
You know, she's literally wearing a torn up tank top at one point, but it's not like they don't do it to be sexy. They're doing it because that's what she's wearing, and that makes sense.
It's torn up tank tops. Let them.
Well, I mean, it just if you have a scene where everyone is in just a normal space suit, and then you have one female in the most ridiculously tight space suit. Why is she in that space suit when everyone else has just the normal we're going to space suit?
In my story, we built a time machine to the 90s, and, then we went into comic book land.
You do what you do.
One more thing that is absolutely important when creating a character. You want the silhouette to be strong. You want to be able to identify the character just from their outline. Like, you think about the best characters that you can recognize just from their shadows. Like, from Bart Simpson to Batman. Yeah. You will know exactly who they are just from the outside shape. Yeah. Right.
And like, if you want to get a feel for that, like, look at some of the Buffy comics, because if you have Xander and Oz in a scene, in TV, there's no mistaking those two characters. Yeah. But if you're at a distance in a comic book, they're two white guys with brown hair. and there's nothing special about either of them. They're just dudes.
It's Bob and Bob.
Yeah, and, like, there's literally an issue of Buffy where Oz showed up and I didn't know. Yeah. I was like, oh, is Oz here? Oh, is that? I thought that was, there's two Xanders.
Okay. But that literally is the John Byrne thing where you like look at everyone in the Marvel Universe, like from Steve Rogers to Hank Pym, and then John Byrne draws them all and they're all the same dude. And you're like, thanks, you John Byrne. Thanks for
God, everybody's got no neck.
It's crazy.
Alex, what was our next question?
Questions.
Yeah.
We got one time for one last question, then we're going to wrap it up here. Eddie?
So make it good.
Why do you say it like that?
Because you had your hand up.
Well, first of all, you're right in front of me, and second of all, because you're my friend. Yeah, that one.
Okay, this is for the whole panel. I'm 49 years old. And
no way.
And I've seen it where
looks
at
good.
One time, DC and Marvel ran everything. And after a while, you know, more people started to feel the vibe within me because they wasn't getting what they wanted from DC and Marvel. Then And along the way came Dinesh and Valiant.
Yes.
DC and Marvel laughed at him. And now look what he's doing. With the resurgence now, and I say resurgence now, because at one point, Indie Comics were the thing you read in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way that Indie Comics now are growing so huge now, mm-hmm. where you can literally go to a convention and hear people argue that, Captain Hulk can beat anybody. And then you're like, okay, well, then I'll take your Captain Hulk and I'll throw in, a ninja and a fake, and let's see who comes out on top. And
I'm such an indie reader. This is great.
Does that give you a lot more faith in the way that it's going now? That a lot more people they'll see DC and Marvel, and they'll go, yeah, that's cool and everything, but
they'll go to the indie section. Yeah.
I love this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's room for both of them right now. I think that now.
Dave, you look a little bit.
No.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, you know. Marvel and DC have had these characters that have been around since like World War II, and they're reinventing them, and they're changing them, but they're still those same characters, and people might want something else, you know, besides Coke or Pepsi.
I think the problem with that though, is, and I had a friend text me the other day, and he's like, hey, do you think that Marvel's caught wind of Princeless? And do you think that they're making changes in that universe to accommodate the need for a book like Princeless? And I said, yeah, I think they are. So it's kind of hard when you've got a company that is maybe a little slower on the uptake.
Sure.
Because they're a Goliath, and you know, they're to move that thing is impossible. It's like the NFL. We were then, they were crazy. I think that what's going to happen is they're going to catch wind, and then they're going to put a lot of money behind it. Mm. And they're not committed to the idea or the purpose of the comic. They're committed to the money to be made from that. And they're going to throw money and dilute everything that's important about the movement to make money. And I don't work for them. But it hurts.
You're a realist.
Look, I'm not saying that what we're not doing isn't valid. I'm saying it's always going to have a smaller audience, because by the time we get a bigger audience, they're going to try and push us down. So it's up to you guys. You tell me. It's not for me to answer. It's for you to answer. Tell me whether or not what we're doing is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And when Marvel or DC does that, just say, look, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I believe in the guy that actually came up with the idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The heart. The real heart.
And picking up comics from the majors that are comics that are being made by the indie guys, I think helps a lot too. Because you're starting to see more indie guys kind of getting promoted and moving into the major leagues, so to speak. And I think that really helps the culture, because people see the path to success through that. And it creates an environment where more people want to do that.
Depends on what you call success.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's absolutely true.
At the end of the day, we don't own those characters. We don't collect any residuals from it. Yes, a lot more people will know who we are, but
it's a way to get your name out there.
No. Working in comics, no matter where you are, from indie to mainstream to Marvel or DC, we all get up in the morning, we all work, right? You wake up in the morning and you choose what you want to do with your life, and you work, because that's what we do. Like, we can't just live on a song, you know what I mean? Like it just depends on what song you want to like sing, right? And I love Marvel DC. Grew up on it. My dad and I, that's the one thing that we talk about, right? But for me, it's having a vision, having a point, and speaking it. If you can do that at Marvel and DC, awesome. If you can do it by yourself, cool.
Yeah.
You know, but. Like, create the avenue for your voice to be heard, no matter what. Right. And that's, to me, that's me dropping the mic.
I think what gives me hope is looking at, you know, I don't know how much Marvel and DC can be counted on to change, but I don't think it matters. Because that used to be the case that, you go to conventions like this and you see guys who worked on comics in the 60s and 70s, and they did their comics, and that was their job, their 40-hour-a-week job for however long, and then their thing went out of style, and now they're just at conventions selling pinups of the same thing they
wrote did 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, that's like, it's not a sustainable job anymore. You can't just count on Marvel or DC for your paycheck.
Yeah.
But what you can do is you can do what Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction and you know, and Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey did, where they came in writing their own thing. They got a job at Marvel and brought their perspective to a character that they liked and did something good, and then started taking that audience over to their own thing, and got to a point that when Marvel said, okay, we want to do this or that or the other, they said, I don't. Fuck you. And I'm gone.
Yeah.
like, here's the thing.
Or
like,
you
like,
can
but
buy your time back.
And everyone that's a timeless creator is doing it. Alan Moore did it. Grant Morrison's doing it. I mean, they'll dip their feet in the water. But they're creators. They make what they want to make, and they play their own song, right? Doesn't mean that they can't contribute to something they love. You know, I mean, they love comics. Man.
Yeah.
So
we have to wrap it up because we're actually running long. This was a fantastic panel.
This is amazing.
Give a round of applause for our panelists. Real quick. Before they leave, we're going to have them give you their booth numbers so you can go talk to them. And actually, I believe Dave is sticking around with us.
I am, but I don't even know what my booth number is.
Just find him. Just
maybe,
find him.
Maybe I'll figure it out for the next
But
I'm A607.
And I'm A606.
Yes.
Right next to
awesome.
Yes.
Like near them.
Yeah,
if
at the end of the road.
Yes.
So, like,
if you guys liked what you heard here, we actually, these are three of our friends. We have them on the podcast every once in a while.
This will be recorded.
This will be posted. So if you want to go back and listen to it again, you can listen to it. In the back, yes, real quick. Name Redacted Podcast. Yes.
Yeah. We have buttons if you want them to remember the name.
I've got, but who wants buttons? Yeah, you do. Button. I left it. Oh, yeah. But you guys can subscribe, and you can find us on nameredactedpodcast.com. You can go through iTunes or Stitcher or Podcast Addict. We have to cut it a little bit short, but thank you guys, everybody, for coming. Hope you guys have a wonderful convention. Come back and see us.